The Bill Shakespeare Project presents This Week in Shakespeare for the week ending Monday, October 27th, 2014. Hola, Bartophiles, and welcome to the 22nd episode of This Week in Shakespeare, a podcast brought to you by the Bill Shakespeare Project. This is our weekly opportunity to let you know about the latest and greatest in Willie Shakespeare headlines coming at you every Tuesday. The goal here is to hit you with a quick blast, no more than 10 minutes tops, of Bard-related news. Plus, we'll try to serve up some historical dates for what was the past 7 days of the year. So, this week's news stories included: The Star ran a story on an appeal for funding for the annual Rotterdam Shakespeare Festival run by the Open Minds Theatre Company. Otherwise, the South Yorkshire Festival will be closed. UT San Diego ran a story entitled Old Globe Serves Up Bard to Go about the Old Globe Theatre's Public Theatre Mobile Shakespeare Unit, which brings the Bard out into the community. The Shakespeare Blog ran a fascinating story on Shakespearean views on politics and history, prompted by the publication of the biography of his hometown, Stratford-upon-Avon, by Nicholas Fogg. The Telegraph ran a story that discussed studies done by Dr. Aubrey Burrell, who postulates that the Dark Lady of the Sonnets was Eileen Florio, the wife of an Italian translator. I always thought the Dark Lady was Martha Jones. That's a Doctor Who joke. Cue the cricket sounds. The Chicago Tribune ran a story on the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, marking its 20th year with a reading of King Lear. WABC ran a story on the Mobile Shakespeare Unit, which brings the Bard to the people of all five of New York City's boroughs, who might not get a chance to catch Shakespeare. It's a program of the public theater. The Boston Globe ran an opinion piece in which the theater critic bemoaned the loss of straightforward presentations of Shakespeare, citing many recent productions. I don't buy the argument, but then I've never subscribed to that theory. Our partners over at the Shakespeare Standard ran the abstract and included a link to Sarah Antonora's scholarly paper on Much Ado About Nothing's Kill Claudio line and the laughter it often elicits. Just scanning it, the paper has some fascinating insights. Can't wait to finish it. The British education site TES ran a story on comments made by violinist Nicola Benedetti that studying classical music is as important as Shakespeare or Dickens. Wholeheartedly agree. The only problem, at least in this country, is that most school districts have cut all funding for music education. Oregon Live ran a story on the upcoming presentation of Michael Pennington's one-man show, Sweet William. Pennington, a legend of British theater, presents this as part performance, part lecture, part chat. The Edwardsville Intelligencer previewed the upcoming run of A Midsummer Night's Dream by the Repertory Theater of St. Louis at the Loretto Hilton Center for the Performing Arts in Webster Groves, Missouri. The Herald Extra previewed Much Ado About Zombies at the Covey Center for the Arts, a zombified and steampunked take on Much Ado About Nothing, beginning its run in Provo, Utah. The Houston Press reviewed The Tempest by Company on Stage, set in a mental hospital, calling the production uneven but unsinkable. Our partners at the Shakespeare Standard ran a review in their Global Shakespeare section on Kenneth Branagh's recent run as Macbeth in New York City at the Park Avenue Armory. Supported by photos, it gave a great account of the importance of setting to the production. The Free Times reviewed King Lear by South Carolina Shakespeare Company, calling the Columbia, South Carolina production fast-paced. Lear, and fast-paced, not two concepts you usually find in the same sentence. The Alternative Press reviewed Henry VIII by the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey, calling the Madison, New Jersey production a sharp, vivid interpretation. The New York Times also reviewed the play, calling it a fine production with some silent, sizzling romance. The New York Times also reviewed Phillida Lloyd's Henry IV at the Donmar Theater in London, with its all-female cast set in a women's prison, saying that the production is exhilarating. The San Francisco Examiner reviewed The Tempest by African American Shakespeare Company, calling the futuristic production intriguing in the visual aspects of the show. CT Now reviewed Hamlet by Hartford Stage with Zach Appleman in the title role, calling it sleek, paranoid, and pulse-pounding, with the lead performance career-propelling. I saw Appleman play Henry V at the Folger in 2013 and would love to see this Hartford, Connecticut production. The Sydney Morning Herald reviewed Henry V by Bell Shakespeare. I know, I've mentioned this World War II air raid bunker set production before, but I just love the concept. The reviewer did too, giving it 4 out of 5 stars, and calling it inventive and impressively energetic. The Daily Telegraph also reviewed the production, calling it exciting theater of the highest order. Hyperallergic.com reviewed the interdisciplinary production of Shakespeare's sonnets by avant-garde director Robert Wilson, songwriter Rufus Wainwright, and the Berliner Ensemble at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, calling it an exploration of the gayest thing the bard ever wrote, and he meant that in a good way. The Charleston Gazette reviewed the touring production of Hamlet by American Shakespeare Center, done in the round, calling it stellar. And Oregon Live reviewed O Romeo by Milagro Theater, a Shakespeare mashup with Latino influences, including Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead imagery, characters from the works of Shakespeare, and a dying bard coming to grips with his own mortality. The reviewer called it a fireball of a play, and it sounds simply awesome. Now, let's take a look back on the last 7 days and how they relate to Shakespearean history, both his and the history in his plays. On October 21st, 1422, Charles VI, King of France, died. Charles was the King of France during the reign of Henry V, and it was his daughter who was married to Henry. He was also the one who signed the Treaty of Troyes, which named Henry his successor. Of course, Henry had died 2 months earlier than Charles did. Two interesting side notes. Another of Charles' daughters, Isabella, was married to Richard II, and she refused order to marry Henry when Richard died. Side note number two, he was also known as Charles the Mad. On October 23rd, 42 BC, the Second Battle of Philippi took place, where the armies of Antony and Octavian defeated the supporters of Brutus, who committed suicide. That event closes the play Julius Caesar. On October 24th, 1537, Jane Seymour died. No, not the actress, but the third wife of Henry VIII. She married Henry 2 weeks after his previous wife, Anne Boleyn, was executed for treason. Jane died less than 2 weeks after giving birth to a son who would later reign as Edward VI. She is the only wife of Henry who was given a queen's funeral. October 25th is St. Crispin's Day, the day of feasting in honor of the twin saints Crispin and Crispian. On this date, in 1415, the forces of Henry V won a decisive victory over the French at Agincourt. This victory of a vastly outnumbered English army over the French is depicted in Henry V. On October 26, 1996, the film adaptation of Twelfth Night, directed by Trevor Nunn and starring Helena Bonham Carter as Olivia, premiered in the U.S. On October 27, 1401, Catherine of Valois was born. Daughter of Charles VI of France, remember him? She would later be married to Henry V as part of the peace treaty between England and France, which also named Henry the heir to the throne of France. She would later give birth to Henry VI, and after becoming a widow, she married Owen Tudor, to whom she birthed Edmund Tudor, the father of the future Henry VII. And that was your week in Shakespeare. Been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project presentation of This Week in Shakespeare for the week ending October 27th, 2014. For our blog and previous Twiz episodes, including links to the news stories we've covered, as well as the real Bill Shakespeare Project podcast, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we'll catch you next week.